Hi, Chandan, how are you?
Hi, hi, hi.
Hi, so quickly, I just wanted to start by introducing ourselves and then you. And so Often is a platform built to allow change makers, entrepreneurs, and small businesses. We give them a platform to express themselves, talk about the kind of work they're doing in the world, and bring their work to light. Chandan is a fantastic restoration artist. So let me just hand it over to you. If you can quickly introduce yourself, talk about the work you do.
Hi, Umang. Thanks for having me over here. Well, I am a restoration artist and a photographer based in Mumbai. That is what I'm doing right now. That is, however, not to say what I have done.
Right.
Years. So we are going to, I guess, primarily talk about this aspect of the work only right now, right?
Absolutely. Right.
I come from a background of being a student of art history, of having written about the field for a very long time. And the restoration part of the business started very, very recently. This is just about like a less than a decade old.
Okay.
Investment of time into this area. Yeah.
Right. Could you talk to me a little bit about why you got into that field of work? What drew you through that to that?
Well, to be quite frank, it was completely by accident. I had happened to have moved countries at that point in time, had come back to Mumbai almost after 10 years of staying away. And I was reacquainting myself with the city when a freak accident forced me to sit at home for almost 6 months. And there was absolutely nothing happening. And I did not foresee, you know, much use for time during that period of time. So I guess then is when some latent motivation to dabble with color and pattern kind of kicked in. And I started working with objects that I've had in my own possession that I think I've been collecting and having inherited from people. And one object basically led to the other. And then, you know, before I knew this had become a whole new story for me.
That's especially inspiring since all of us are stuck at home right now, and you could pick up a completely new vocation and build a career around something that, you know, was forced upon you rather by staying at home. I would love to know a little bit more about your journey, you know, because obviously being a student of art to becoming an artist is a huge leap. Could you talk me through what sort of process you went through to, you know, build creative confidence, know that you're good, put your stuff out there?
So I was not a student of art in the sense of being a student of art. I was more into the academic aspects of you being an artist rather than the actual physical aspects completely. My only visual lettering or introduction into the world of art, as it were, came through my feeling for photography. That's how I kind of tried to tackle and, you know, attempt to understand this entire new idiom when I began. However, with time, I had to, you know, get down and dirty, get my hands greasy as well. So by now, I covered a whole gamut of skills, whether it is, you know, actual physical restoration, carpentry, or having to, you know, paint pattern on the objects that I'm talking about. It would be helpful if we had some pictures, but yeah.
I'll walk people through, you know, your work, etc. Sure. But before that, I want to first understand, you know, because it's an inspiring journey for people to actually hear about how you came to be where you are today. I would love to know a little bit more about your actual, you know, process of, you know, picking a piece of art or collecting something and then restoring it. Actually, maybe how about I move that part of the process forward. I've selected a few pieces of art that I think were my favorites. Maybe you can walk us through this particular piece.
Let me just first tell you a little about the restoration aspect of the whole work first.
Right.
My work comes from a very deeply from a very deep value system. We all have grown up in middle class homes. Many of us have grown up in middle class homes, where you know, possessions are really valued, and we try to get as much use out of things and before just discarding them away. So that is basically what informed the core of what I do. When we normally talk about vintage or antique, there is always this connotation of opulence, of you know, something being extremely expensive or rare. That is not the kind of vintage I am talking about. What I'm talking about is basically a way of life which invests time and energy and more importantly care into objects that we have around ourselves.
Right.
With a view to sustainability, with a view to, you know, taking more use out of resources and material that I have. So that comes from a very specific and a very strong, you know, core value there. I do not discriminate, discriminate about, you know, amongst objects when it comes to the level of disrepair. It can be an extremely damaged piece. It can be a completely, you know, trashy piece of, you know, thing that you might have just come across or might have had for many years. But if something can be done about it, I'm all for it. So this package that you just showed us was basically old mango packages at the times that were used in homes, in homes, you know, almost all our homes. There are these come in various shapes and various sizes, and so this basically went through firstly, you know, intense sanding to remove all the dust and grime from it. Then I kind of filled up or whatever cracks had built up on the object over a period of time. And then, of course, the pattern work. Now, the pattern work also speaks of some sense of heritage. These are Mughal motifs that I have picked up from tapestries and Mughal carpets. And so there is a revival in terms of also trying to reintroduce an old motif in a contemporary setting as well with the object.
I especially like this piece, with, and also your philosophy is very interesting because almost a throwback, you know, to the days when artisans and, you know, there was no digital art. So everything that was created was cherished and was, you know, handmade, and the value was associated because of that. I mean, the Japanese principle of wabi-sabi is obviously very famous now, but we've been doing stuff like that for a long time. And this is sort of our interpretation of this. This is not digital art. This is not, these are all one-of-a-kind pieces, right? So could you talk me through actually, you know, building a collection around themes? How do you go about that? What are your thought processes when you build a new art collection?
Well, the collection and the theme is always secondary. The object comes first for me. Okay. You know, I look at the object and I see what stories can be built around it. If you look at my Insta bio or, you know, I mentioned that I'm a storyteller. So that storytelling with each and every piece is a very important aspect of what I do. So it is not just preserving motifs, it's not just preserving objects, it's also preserving stories at the same time. So if, for example, if there is a chest which has been salvaged from a monastery in Tibet, it will be painted accordingly. The motifs will be, you know, organic to that particular object. If it is an old Burmese trunk, then the story will be organic to that. And I try to trace, you know, how the object has moved and how it has been used in the past many years that it has been around, of its existence, basically.
I also want to talk to you a little bit about self-expression, you know. So art is a powerful medium of self-expression. And when you're doing restoration art, how do you draw a balance between, you know, expressing yourself through the colors and the textures versus the actual piece that you're picking up and making sure that its tradition and its history is taken care of as well? So how do you draw that balance? Where do you sort of see yourself creatively going with that?
Well, you know, I don't really overthink that bit at all. That is where exactly I try to sort of tap into something very primal, something which is very, you know, which is very me, in the sense that I try to look into my Indian sort of, you know, Indianness at that point in time. We are not shy of colors. We are not, you know, afraid of combining all kinds of disparate colors together. So I genuinely do not overthink that aspect at all, or do not intellectualize that beyond what is necessary. Of course, there is an element of what the client wants, what you know, what who I'm making it for is also important.
Right.
However, beyond a point, it is not not such an issue.
Can we talk a little bit about your inspiration as well? So when you design something, when you actually got into the field, etc., what has inspired you apart from the object itself? Where do you draw your inspiration from?
Again, it's a very hard to pinpoint a question for me. I think in what I do, almost everything I have read sometimes comes into play. Everything that I have seen, maybe in a movie, maybe fashion is a great source of inspiration for me. Fashion, especially of the vintage variety, of the kind of, you know, clothes and the kind of various textiles and these that you know you observe not just in India but across the world. So fashion is a great source of inspiration for me. Of course, there's history, there is the archaeology, architecture, you know, the very sort of visual and obviously their mediums that you look from and learn from.
Absolutely. And what would you say in terms of your style of art? Again, I know I'm delving into it a little bit deeper, but I am really fascinated by your use of color and your use of pattern and texture. And it's always interesting to see when people are using, you know, color so heavily and texture so heavily in the same piece of art. How do you go about bringing that, you know, emotion out using color and texture? Because that's very, very prevalent in all of your works. I can actually pinpoint one that was really intriguing to me. So this piece of, this piece of work specifically, I thought was very interesting. Gave you the, it makes you feel Indian, but you see the fact that it's, the floral aspect is also very Indian. Use of color, you know, it's really bright and summery.
So again, that is, Umang, that is not very deliberate. That is not very, very conscious in terms of what I want to bring out. But yes, patterns specifically, are endlessly fascinating for me. I will pick up patterns from my travels. That particular arabesque motif that you just showed us was basically from Akbar's tomb in Sikandra, which is it's painted on one of the walls, and it is this expansive mural that goes on endlessly. And this was just an attempt to recreate that entire memory of actually visually being in that space. The colors just. Colors, I really did not basically deliberate or overthink again.
Right. So the historical aspect of all of your work, you know, we're talking about the time of the Mughals. How are you seeing your art evolve as you're becoming as you're growing as an artist? I obviously with your travels, with obviously Indianness remains to the core. I'm seeing, but your travels, etc. How are you looking to expand your horizons? Keep being creative. Keep pushing the boundaries.
You know, to call it just merely Indian, or to call any artist just to, you know, marry an artist completely to their identity would be really limiting them in a very, and which has a disservice, I feel. So for me, the art is not just the colors and the form or the pattern that you see in the moment. It is also what goes behind it. So a lot of Japanese philosophies, again, you mentioned Babi Sabi a little earlier. A lot of Japanese techniques really fascinate me, and I try to use elements from Asian art routinely. There's a lot of poetry sometimes, which kind of inspires things, and which are not really visible at first glance. But I'm talking about the process that goes behind that particular thought, and I, as an artist, I'm able to articulate that.
Right.
But it is hard to basically say how I see this evolve or where I see this go. I am I genuinely feel serendipity is my middle name, and
okay.
Let it take me where it will, and I'm happy to float along.
Right, that's fantastic. And actually, the reason I'm asking these questions is because we had a interesting chat with Art in Fun, which is a curated art platform. We've also done a separate one where we're talking about digital art, where all the artists are sort of trying to, you know, art has been sort of pigeonholed into being Indian art, Japanese art, philosophies, etc. Where everyone's, you know, had the same opinion, where they're saying that it's not that. You are now, because you're living in such a, you know, world that's so cosmopolitan, you gain your influences from everywhere and you marry them together. And obviously, your identity remains, right? You as an artist, but you play along with that, and that's how your art will evolve, with your experiences, etc. We have a few questions coming in. Let me pose them to you. So, have you ever done any original products along with your restoration and upcycling projects? Something from scratch?
Yeah, there's always a parallel line of products which are done completely from scratch. Whether it is furniture or whether it is textile-based products or whether it is even, you know, wood-based products, there is a parallel line which all, you know, always happens along with the upcycled range. But my focus is mostly the baby. The real baby is actually the recycled and the upcycled product.
Right. Can you talk a little bit? Someone also is asking, you know, how does one start becoming an restorative artist? Where do they start? What is the easiest way to get into it?
Well, there is no entry point. Mine was an accident, like I mentioned to you. But yeah, read about it, dream about it. Know what you want to say, and more importantly, how you want to say it, and to whom you want to say. So those questions are questions that need to be answered first. The skill-based questions can always come later. and wish I almost every day wish that I were a better artist. I could skill up better, but that, that is a work in progress. And I don't think I will ever stop learning something, you know, insofar as the specific skills are concerned. But to start, you have to, you know, it's again a very hard question for me to answer.
Right. Thanks. But what I was also wanted to sort of transition to is actually making your art available to the world. So we see a lot of artists who are very creatively inclined, fantastic at their work, but they struggle to, you know, make their art commercial, put a price to it, put it out there. What was your process and your experience like doing that?
So those were really petty questions when I started. To me, they still are petty questions. I initially just made for the joy of making, and each object that was made funded the next object that I basically made, because this can end up being a fairly you know, cost intensive effort, and if you do not have any idea about who is going to buy it, you don't know where the money is coming from, you either don't do it or do it with this understanding that it may never sell, right? So for me, each project has basically funded the next and funded the next, and which is how it has now become this, you know, tree with many branches. But trust me, that's not how it was when I began at all. And to everybody who's out there struggling, of course you need to have another job which is actually funding you and feeding you, and only then are you able to, you know, give your heart and soul to this, to an art practice, which in time will flourish, but you have to be willing to give it that much time and effort in the beginning and not expect instant returns.
Right. Also, in terms of your clients, when they come to you with an expectation, etc., you being an artist, what kind of, how do you sort of interpret briefs? Do you just get objects that you have to work with? So how do you design something based on clients?
That is a very important aspect of how I work. Basically, it's a very interactive process, and almost it becomes a tussle where the client wants to dominate almost every creative decision I make, and it has to be I have to then gently sort of, you know, find a way and of doing what I want to do, and of then giving the client what they actually, you know, have been wanting. To completely take the creative decision-making process away from me would do a genuine disservice to the money they give me. I try and tell them.
Right.
And, so it is interactive. There's a lot of back and forth. The process is very slow. It is not you know, an instant process at all. Often I tell my clients that you have to give me that much time to talk and discuss and to understand where you're coming from before I can, you know, even attempt to start a brief. So. And I have deliberately kept it that way because it firstly gives me the most pleasure, and secondly, also I think satisfies people more in the process.
Are you also selective in terms of what kind of projects you take on? Because that's also a very big aspect of being able to express yourself correctly. So how do you make that decision?
I wish I knew how to say no better. Again, that's a work in process. But I am getting increasingly selective now. I am getting, you know, because there is only so much time you have. I'm a single artist run studio, and there are these strict sort of, you know, caveats on how much time you can spend doing what you do. So I try and make the most of my time now.
Right. I actually want to end by actually talking about my favorite piece in your whole collection. It was actually this chest, I would say. This is, you know, a fantastic piece, because again, the attention to detail and the use of color, etc., really, really speaks to you. So could you talk me through the process of this particular piece of work, and just from the beginning, your creative process?
Yeah. So that's a very large dowry chest that I sourced from Gujarat. It is you know, typically these large pieces of furniture that were used to sort of store your entire household effects in the days gone by, when houses wouldn't come with, you know, inbuilt storage or cupboards and stuff like that. So this particular piece has been made for a client who wanted a statement piece, who wanted a coffee table which was really bright and bold and which kind of stood out. So the colors again evolved with you know, intense consultation with her. And the motif is basically inspired by Tanjore murals from Madurai and at Tanjore. So you see the lotus repeated in various forms, and you see the Anapakshi motif, which is the blue birds right there at the bottom, which are very sort of prolific motif used down south.
Really, really beautiful. So could you end by telling a little bit about how do, if we have something that we'd like to work with you on in terms of, you know, commission you for a project, how does one go about that?
Send me a mail.
Yeah.
And that gives me lots of time, lots and lots of time.
So how much time were you talking? So how much time did it take for someone, for you to work on that particular project, the chest, for example?
The chest took me almost 4.5 months because the image that you showed is still not complete. I kept working on the product for some more time. So right. It took me about that much time. Yeah.
Okay. Someone actually has another question. Your Burmese actor's chest, what was your process with regards to that specifically?
So the Burmese actor's chest actually has a very intense personal story. I used to see these trunks at my grandmother's place. My grandfather used to be, my grandmother and grandfather had stayed in Burma for some time, and they came back with a lot of, you know, these furniture, a lot of things from Burma. And I realized that there were a lot of takers for these actors' chests down south as well. So there was this, these used to be imported very frequently to Chettinad and those regions, in the around the turn of the century. So these chests are basically very heavy teak boxes with compartments where actors can store their wigs and pancakes and makeup. And these chests would be carried from, you know, village to village as the opera, you know, moved from, you know, when the performance moved from place to place. So that particular piece then called for a little bit of drama, which kind of also sort of referenced the personality of an actor, you know, a person who puts on so much paint, a person who sort of transforms his persona completely. So I ripped the box completely, and I wish we could show some images, but the image comes...
I can't find it anywhere.
The box comes with intricate carving detail that happens all inside the box as well. Right. So I dismember the entire box completely, and then I line it up with silk from, you know, end to end, so that the richness and that color kind of really comes in then. And of course, I'm not talking about the actual physical restoration, which means a lot of sanding and, you know, getting rid of detritus from the past. And then equal amount of paint is then kind of taped over the top of the box as well. And then the theme depends on what the client wants.
Right.
So basically, so that's where we kind of try and invent play with the themes and motifs and the meanings.
We have a couple of questions coming, and I hope you have some time. Last couple of questions, if you don't mind.
Sure, no problem.
Someone's asking, can you talk a little bit about your YouTube channel as well?
The YouTube channel is completely thanks to this forced lockdown that we have been subjected to. Mm-hmm. You know, right now is a bad time because the workers are not available. Our workers have left, and Mumbai, as you know, is going through. A lot of pain with respect to movement and with respect to the studio is out of bounds completely for me right now.
Right.
And so I thought this is a perfect opportunity for me to actually meditate a little more about what the process means to me, mm-hmm. and what is it that informs me and what is it that connects me to you know, my viewer. So I started making these detailed process videos where I try to sort of communicate a little bit of the philosophy, a little bit of the mindset that was going behind each of these, you know, projects for me. And it's barely 4 videos old. So it's not as if it is, and it's hard work making these videos.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to see how I can make it into a meaningful enterprise. Follow me, guys.
Yeah, you are a storyteller, so it kind of fits very nicely in the overall scheme of things. I think it's a very pertinent question, the next one. How do you cope with your work being copied or replicated?
I don't think about it.
Okay.
Because try as you may, it is a reality. We are in a digital world. We put our work out there, and you can't help it if it ends up inspiring others, or if it ends up, you know, encouraging people to sort of, you know, just it's just a click, right? I can click and I can take a design down to my desktop. Rather than think and worry about that, I genuinely use it as an excuse to do the next best thing.
Right.
And to everybody who's out there aspiring to do something creative with their time, I just want to say, make it count, guys. Make every hour count. Let it be something that comes from your heart, comes from your soul. And let's not take the easy way out.
I think that's a fantastic message to end this with. It was fabulous talking to you. I think your process, your storytelling, and the actual intricacy of your artwork is mind-blowing. Thank you so much again for your time.
It was amazing speaking to you, Umang. Thanks for everybody who joined in.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.